Greetings, this is Reverend Juliet Nightingale, and welcome to this transmission of Toward the Light, Leading Back to the Source. This is a program centered on near-death, out-of-body, and similar spiritually transformative experiences and related topics, including what people should know about the dying process, the many facets of after-death communications, living interdimensionally and being multisensory, intuition and telepathy, and more. We feature special guests who are both experiencers and researchers in the realm of NDEs and related topics. You are more than welcome to bring in and make comments or ask questions during the show. And we'd also like to tell you that there are a myriad of support and services available through our organization, Toward the Light. Donations are very much needed and welcome and very much appreciated. So I'm going to say thank you in advance for your generous donations. You can send via PayPal or personal check. Details are on towardthelight.org and also our media website, towardthelight.info. This week I'm very pleased to have a fellow near-death experiencer who is the author of the book Journey Through the World of Spirit, God, Gaia, and Guardian Angels. Interestingly enough, this book is very much praised and endorsed by people who have been on Toward the Light, PMH Atwater and John J. Harper, who was on Toward the Light last week. Let us welcome to Toward the Light, Mr. David Oakford. Welcome, David, and how are you this evening?
I'm fine, Juliet. I'm happy to be here, and thank you for having me.
Oh, it's wonderful to have you, and boy, you've got some very interesting testimonies to share, I'm sure, the events that led up to your NDEs, and tell us a little bit about that. I know that you were quite a young man at this time, and you were in you're in an area in Michigan near Detroit, am I correct?
That's correct. I was in a suburb that borders on Detroit. I lived about a mile and a half away from Detroit.
So what did you call it, the south side, which is an area easily for people getting in trouble and all of that stuff?
Yes, yes. It was in the more of the lower middle class section of town, and it was close to Detroit. I went to high school about a mile away from Detroit. But it's still a good place to get in trouble. It's not an area that really doesn't have all that good a reputation.
Oh, for goodness sakes. But it seems like the difficulties that you endured as a youth really led you to a very profound experience. So would you like to talk about that a little bit? Share with us some of the details that led to your near-death experience.
Okay. Now, in my life, because of where I lived and the growing up process that I had, I grew up pretty much independent. I was one of nine children, and I kind of tend to think that I was a little neglected and left to be on my own devices, and I made a lot of bad decisions, and one of them was to get involved in drugs and hang out with people who were also involved in drugs. And that's pretty much because of my childhood and everything. You know, I'm not trying to make any excuses here, but because of my childhood, I ended up making those decisions and doing that. And I come toward when I had the experience about 3 or 4 months before, I realized what I was doing and I wanted to change. And part of that change would be for me to remove myself from the area that I was in. And I wanted to do that, and I planned on doing that. And come time for the day before that I was supposed to leave, I decided that I wanted to attend one last party with my friends because I wouldn't see them again. And then after that, I was going to take on my own and leave town and travel around the country and find a place for myself where I wouldn't be influenced by the things that I was influenced by, except when come time for that party, I made another bad decision, and I really messed up and ended up in the boat that I was in.
Wow, and this was literally right across the road from where you lived, correct?
Yes, yes. That was about, maybe less than 100 yards from where I grew, from the house I lived in.
And how old were you at the time, David?
I was 19.
Okay. I have made this comment before because I know that a number of people have ended up taking drugs. It seems throughout so many generations, and I realize that there, unfortunately, are incidences or what have you that would cause people to feel the need to resort to drugs as something that might give them a sense of well-being or being accepted or loved or what have you. And so I always make it a point to say that it's not good to blame people for resorting to drugs, even though it's not really the best idea. But unfortunately, people need to look more at the causes of this rather than just, you know, making derogatory statements about and towards people who do use drugs. And I can certainly understand that when there's a lack of love and when there's considerable neglect for whatever reason, it can cause people to resort to whatever. And yet, it looks like in your case, and in a number of cases, really, I've had a few people on my show who've dealt with drugs and even suicide and that sort of thing. The light uses these experiences really to elevate you to a much greater place, and you gain a lot of wisdom as a result of this. So, this is good. This is the kind of uplifting part of this message, I would say, that people who do have these experiences, the light can also use these, what might be interpreted as an unfortunate experience, to turn it around into something profoundly powerful. So let's go ahead, let's proceed with your sharing the experience and what led you into your NDE. You were at a friend's place, I guess, sort of across the road or what have you, at a party, there was music going on and so forth. So continue with this. This is very, very interesting.
Well, what I did was I got this drug from my friend, and I wasn't really for sure what it was. I thought it was something else, and I treated it that way. And I ended up, it was supposed to be smoked, and what I did with it was crushed it up and snorted it like cocaine. And I was also drinking all day. And when my friend came back after he brought it to me, when he brought it to me, he left. And then before he left, he said, don't do anything with it till I get back. I'll be right back. Well, I blew that off, and I went ahead and did what I did. And then when he came back, he said, well, what did you do? And I told him what I did, and he said, no, that's you're good luck. You'll be lucky if you live.
Wow.
And what I did after that was I went outside, and I took a beer out there, and I started to get really high, and then I got to the point where I couldn't stand up anymore, so I sat down because I was afraid I was going to fall down, and I didn't want to be embarrassed or anything. And I really didn't think that anything bad was really going to happen to me. I had to, I kind of thought I was invincible at the time. And when I finally passed out, I first experienced like a blackness type of a thing, like I was like floating through the wind. It was a quiet type thing, and I had what I know now to be an out-of-body experience, to where I took a little trip with my friends in the car, and it was really weird because I could see my friends, I could hear my friends, but I tried to interact with them, and I couldn't interact with them at all.
So you were actually out-of-body whilst they were in the motor car, and you were traveling with them out-of-body, correct?
Yes.
Wow, okay.
Yes, and what I did after that was during the out-of-body experience, I saw things that I didn't know for sure what they were. We rode around the block in my neighborhood, and I could see things in the trees, and they were living things. I didn't know what they were, but when I glanced at them, they would vanish. But there was one that didn't vanish when I looked at him. He looked me straight in the eye, and he smiled at me and everything. And I didn't know what it was, but that was the last thing I remember before I felt like I woke up again. And when I woke up, I was in the house that I was at, and I was in a chair.
Now, let's back up just a little minute.
Okay.
Can you describe what this entity looked like that you saw?
Oh, well, he was small. He was a little bit bigger than the other ones that I saw, but he had this clothing on that looked kind of old, but it was kind of a festive type of a thing, and he had he looked sort of human. He looked more he didn't have any wings or anything like that, and I felt that he was connected to the trees, the tree that he was in.
Oh, okay.
And I like I said, I really didn't know what he was, but I was kind of amazed by that I was seeing something like that, and I didn't know what was happening to me.
Well,
but it was something different that I never experienced before, that I knew.
Well, that's very interesting. Now, did you get a warm, loving vibe from him, or a more sinister vibe from
him? It was more of a loving vibe. He was friendly.
Okay.
He was friendly, that I could feel.
Okay. Yeah, I just like to get these details because they can be very meaningful, if you know what I'm saying. All right, so then you sort of came back around into the physical realm, as it were, and you're back in the house now, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, and when I quote, woke up, I could hear the radio playing. The stereo was playing. It was a real powerful stereo, and the music was really, really loud, and it was playing Doors music. And I really liked loud music before that. I was kind of a rocker type of a person.
Oh, okay.
And but this music was like, it, I felt like it was coming through me.
Yes.
And it was very uncomfortable, and I didn't know what to do about it. So I got up out of the chair, and I went to turn the stereo down. But I couldn't turn it down. I couldn't touch it or anything. And I thought, well, I'll unplug it from the wall, but I couldn't touch the plug to unplug it. And I didn't know what was going on. It's like I would go to grasp it, but I couldn't touch it. And it seemed like the music was getting louder and louder and louder, so I thought, well, I'll find someone else to do it. But I called around for my friends, and I didn't see anyone, and no one came. And I looked around the house, but when I looked around, I thought about each of the rooms in the house. And once I thought of them, I could see them. And I didn't see that there was anyone in there. There was nobody around. And after that, I got really scared. Because I thought, well, my friends were there before, and I didn't know what to do. And I called around for my friends some more. I couldn't find them. And then I looked outside, and I could see that the outside was different than it was before. There were colors around everything, and it was just different. And I wanted to go out there. I was curious. I wanted to go out there, but I couldn't get out the door, because I couldn't grasp the knob, and I didn't know how to go through there. And I remember I went to the bathroom, and when I went to the bathroom, I couldn't see myself in the mirror at all. And I didn't know what to make of that, and that got me even more scared. So I went back to the family room where my body was, and I saw my body there. And that got me really scared. I thought, well, my friend was right. and I didn't know what to do. I called for my friends again. I couldn't find them. And then I decided, well, I'm going to pray to God, because I knew in my heart that there was a God. I had a Lutheran upbringing for just the 7th and 8th grades. My parents sent me to a parochial school. And I became confirmed, and that was the extent of my religion, was 2 years, and a lot of it I just did not believe.
Now, was that Catholic that you're talking about?
No, it was Lutheran.
Lutheran, all right.
Yes. And but I did. I believed that there was a God, but I didn't believe a lot of the details of it.
Sure.
And I knew about prayer. Mm. And I thought, well, I'm going to try praying and see what happens. So I prayed to the God of my heart for help. And then I looked toward the door, and I saw this spirit being there. I named him Bob in my book.
Yes, I saw that.
He had a name, and when I saw him, he introduced himself, but I don't remember the name because it was something I couldn't pronounce. And that's why I don't remember it. That's how come I named him Bob in my book.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a name for me, too. He introduced himself, and he called me, and he said, I'm here to help you. And I became suspicious of him at first because I had heard in the religion about deceivers and that type of thing. And I kind of thought he was God, too, at first. And he picked up on that. He picked up on my thought. And we communicated thought to thought. And he told me that he wasn't God. And he told me that is that he knew me, and he's been with me all through this life. And he started to tell me things that I had only thought about when I was younger, when I was like 3 or 4 years old. And he told me things that I thought about when I would, before I went to bed at night, you know, when I was right before I went to sleep. And it proved to me that he knew me. And I thought, well, okay, he's here and he's helping me. And I prayed for someone to come and help me, and someone came. So my prayer was answered, so I thought, well, I'll trust him.
And let me interject something here. I'm taking it that through all of this, even up until this point, you did not realize that your body was dead. Is that correct, or had you already deduced that your body was dead?
I really didn't know for sure whether my body was dead.
Mm-hmm. But you knew you were out of body at this point, or did you?
I'm sorry?
Did you now realize that you were actually traversing out of body?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
I definitely knew that I was separated from my body. And I tried to get back into my body, but I couldn't get back in. And that was one of the things that made me even more scared and let me pray.
Oh, God love you. This is so interesting. And this happens a lot, and this is very good for people to learn about, because one point that I have often made is the fact that death is an afterthought, if that thought even exists at all. You know, this is proof that consciousness does indeed survive death of the body. So continue. This is a very interesting and fascinating story, lad.
Yes, and on that note, I thought that I was still alive, because I could hear the music, which went away when Bob came to me. And I wasn't scared when Bob came to me.
Oh,
and I thought, well, if I can hear the music, then I can't be dead. And if I can think of things and see things, then I can't be dead. Because I thought once you die, that was it.
Yeah. A lot of people are conditioned to think that, unfortunately, and this is why our experiences and sharing our experiences is so important to prove otherwise.
Yeah, so basically I thought, I knew I was out of my body, but I didn't put it together that I was dead. That didn't happen until way later.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And after Bob introduced himself and he told me about me, and I started to trust him, he told me that I could go anywhere I wanted to go. He said, I could go outside if I wanted to go. I could go any place in the world that I wanted to go, and any place I wanted to go. And I didn't know where I wanted to go. And I thought about it, and I thought about the seven wonders of the world, because I had read a little bit about them when I was growing up. And I thought, well, why not the seven wonders of the world? There are great things from what I understood. And Bob told me, he said, well, there's only like two of them left, the pyramids in Egypt and the Grand Canyon in the southern, you know, in the southwest U.S. And I had been to the Grand Canyon when I was like 14 years old. We went on vacation and went there. And Bob said, well, he told me, well, I thought about the pyramids, and Bob said, yes, we can go there. All you have to do is think about where you want to go and feel where you want to go, and trust me, and we'll go. Right when I did that, the next thing I know, we were in Egypt. It was like I snapped my fingers, and we were there.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't quite know what to make of it, because it was weird. I could see the past, the pyramids went in the past when they, you know, when they were first built, and I could see the pyramids at the present time also. It was like time was superimposed on each of the places, and I could see souls there too. I could see souls there in the past, and I could see souls there in the present. And I could see what I believe to be my own soul there. And I could see that I did something which I do not remember, but it was bad. It was bad, and it hurt a lot of people. And Bob told me that my life now is related to what I did back then. And so my life is basically to atone for what I did and learn what I did not learn in that past life.
That is very interesting.
And I didn't know. I asked how I could be seeing both places, and I was told because that was how things worked. That was the order. That was like. How to explain it. It was order. It was how the universe works, is what he told me. And like everything intertwines is what I understood.
Well, it's very common knowledge, too. I know PMH Atwater, and I have talked about this a lot, and numerous people have, actually. When we're on the other side, time-space does not exist the way we perceive and experience it on the 3D dimension, so on the third-dimensional plane. So it's very common. In fact, I think I use a similar terminology of things being superimposed. You can see past, present, and future all in the now on the other side, and of course it's really hard for people to grasp that when we're caught up in linear time and trying to fathom how does that happen. But it's so natural when we are experiencing that. So, you know, as you're describing this, I'm nodding, yes, this is very familiar. I've been there too. So this is great. Go ahead and continue, David. This is wonderful what you're sharing.
Okay, well, after I saw and learned about that, I thought about what Bob said about how I could go anywhere I wanted to go. And I thought, well, I've been to this one place, and I wanted to see more. So I thought about going somewhere else, and I wanted to see more of the planet. And I didn't really get to see it when we went to Egypt, because I went there so fast. So I told Bob that I would like to see more, but I would like to be able to see it. I would like to go places and go slow so I could see the sights along the way. And what we did was we flew, and we went over the Middle East, and we went on a easterly direction. And we went past the countries that were there, and I could see what I believe to be the energies of the countries. And it was kind of like a glow type of a thing. And it was different colors, different intensities. And I asked Bob about that because I was curious. And he said that the level of the energy of the lands depends on how the humans have treated the land and how spiritual and how close to the spirit world of spirit, I could say, and how spiritual they are, and how much that, and how they treat each other. And some of the countries had like a brighter and a higher intensity, and I could see this, and I could feel it too. And after I asked him about it, he told me more, and he told me that there are special energy places that are in the oceans, and there's some on the land, so where the planet gets its energy and where the planet transmits its energy.
Sort of like vortices and all of that.
Pardon?
Like vortices.
Yes, that's what I understand those to be now. Of course, I didn't know that then.
Mm.
And it was just one of the things that he showed me. And when we flew like about the height of the space shuttle would fly.
Okay.
It was, more kind of in the twilight, in the atmosphere before space. Well, we were up that high, and that's how I could see things. And we continued around, and we came toward the United States. And I could see the energy of the United States, too, but it was different. It was different than the other countries. It had kind of a, I guess I can describe it as a wild intensity. It was almost like, I would think today to be, ungrounded or not properly grounded.
Mm.
And I saw places. I saw the Northwest U.S. and I could see where we have deforested places up there. And I could see in cities where we have polluted, and the energies of those were all different, and that's why the energies were different. That's what I understood, and I it wasn't what I expected to see, but that's what I saw, so I had to go with that.
How did that affect you when you saw all that?
Pardon?
How did that affect you when you saw all of that?
Well, I was very surprised, and I was sad too. I was sad because I knew that things could be better, and I was surprised to see that I understood why, and that I was shown why. I didn't believe that I could be shown that. I did. All through the whole experience, I couldn't believe that it was happening to me. But when we were in the United States, also, because of what I saw and the reason for it, because of the human interaction, I wondered about the humans, and I asked about the energies of them, and it was explained to me that the energies of the humans is evident in the auras that we have around us,
exactly.
Which I had no idea that those even existed back then.
Mm.
And I was told that there were darker type of energies and higher types of energies, and there were humans, and there were spiritual beings that were not human, and some of them were dark and some of them were light.
Exactly.
And I asked about that, and I was told that the darker ones are the ones who would choose negativity. The spirits that had were dark because of the negativity that they had in their life, and because of not loving one another. It's more people that hurt each other, and I saw that they weren't all dark. But they were what I understand today to be lost souls, as souls that either don't know about the light, so they don't go there, or they know about the light, and now these would be the dark ones, the ones that would know about the light but choose to not go there, and then prey on the humans that are there to get their energies from them.
Oh, yes, and that definitely does exist.
And I was also told that the humans, the energies that they have, and also the what I call spirit people, they are what the basic producers of the energies in the cities, because the big cities are asphalt jungles. They don't have the natural type of energies that should be the base of them. They don't have as much, and that's how I could see the different cities and kind of gauge their energies on how the people were and how they treated the environment.
That's a very good point too.
And I saw my own city and the Detroit area, and the vibration was very, very low, and I understood that it was because of the way that we polluted it, you know, with the Industrial Revolution and all that. And it was really, really interesting to me, and I wanted to know more, and I basically learned about the interaction of the energies between the decisions that we make and the planet itself. And I wondered about the planet's energy and what kind of condition the planet's energy was in. And I wondered if I could see it. And Bob said, sure, we could see it. You can go anywhere you want to go. So we went out into space, and I could see the planet, and I could see the aura around the planet. And that really moved me. That a feeling of love just washed over me, like I was one with the planet, and I really cared for it. I really didn't understand before that how great this planet is and how great it can be. And the aura was like blue, and Bob told me that it was even better a long time ago.
And did it seem to vary in tone or frequency in different parts of the planet, or was it just this whole auric field pretty uniform that was surrounding the planet?
It was pretty uniform. It was more along the lines of the planet in general, the aggregate of everything.
Okay. Yes. Mm.
When I saw the differences, I saw them when we were closer to the planet, when we weren't, you know, so that far away from it.
Yes, and I think what you were seeing with the
country, it was pretty constant.
And what you were seeing with the countries and the cities and all of that, you were in fact seeing their auric field, their essence, their energy. It's very interesting to note that as well. So go ahead, and then what happened from there as you were observing and feeling this deep compassion for the planet?
Well, that led me to want to know more. I wanted to know, I understood that the planet has energy, and the planet gives and takes energy from somewhere. And I thought, well, where? It has to probably come from the other planets and the rest of the universe. And that led me to say, well, I want to see more. I want to see the rest of the planet. And I also wondered about the stars, because I knew that they probably had a hand in all of this too. And I thought about this. I looked and I thought about this one star. It was by like the Little Dipper. And what we did was, we went past all the planets on the way to the star. And when we passed the planets, I could see their energies and their auras. And Bob explained to me that the planets each have a different purpose for souls, and they have a theme. And they are where souls go before they come to our planet. And they learn lessons according to those themes, and when they come to our planet, we put all those lessons together that we've learned in our past incarnations. And basically, I saw souls living on the other planets. I know it sounds weird, but that's what I saw.
Yeah, I don't think it's weird at all.
Well, it sounds weird to a lot of the people that I've tried to share this with, you know, in a verbal sense.
I think it's rather daft to believe that this could be the only planet with life on it. Give me a break, you know. That's That's very, very narrow-minded and ignorant thinking at best.
Yeah. Well, one thing though, that I learned from all this is that life is a lot bigger than most people think.
Oh, is it ever?
Life is not just being a human. It's more than that, much, much more than that.
Indeed. In fact, Michael Newton, in his book Journey of Souls, he's the hypnotist who actually has people, whilst under a hypnotic state, talk about their experiences between lives, whereas Dr. Brian Weiss focuses on past lives, Dr. Michael Newton focuses on the experience of the soul between lives. Interestingly enough, all of this stuff that you're talking about is mentioned by a number of his subjects. And in fact, when I was reading the book, I thought, oh, blimey, this is so familiar, because it reminded me of what I myself had experienced. So fortunately, you know, there's a bit more of the same information that's starting to come through with the different dimensions, the different planets, the different life forms, and how a soul can actually traverse and experience different lives on different planets, different dimensions, and what have you. So this is not nonsense. This is very real and substantial. And the fact that independent of one another, these individuals have really come up with pretty much the same testimonies, analysis, experiences, and what have you. So this is great. Continue, David.
Well, after the planets, after we passed all the planets, we were still on the way to the star, and we made it to the star. Now, when I saw it up close, it didn't look like a star. It looked more like a spiral, and it had a calm center to it, and I could see on the other side of the center, and I could feel the other side of the center. And I wanted to go there. And I told Bob, let's go there. And he said, no. And it's one place that I really don't want you to go until you are ready. And I don't think you're not ready. And I don't think you're ready. He said, I would need to be ready to be able to handle what was there. And so I came up to that roadblock, and I started thinking more, and I thought about God, and I asked Bob about God. And he told me that God is the energy that is in all things, the energy that's in all the planets, the energy that's in us. It's a kind of like a seed that's in everything. And it's the baseline energy, and he said most likely, even if I have millions of incarnations, I will never really fully understand God. He said that's how big he is, and he told me that that God can go through where I want it to go, and. Because, and the way I understood it, I understood that on the other side of that was another dimension and a whole another type of place to go. And after God, I thought about, well, what about Jesus? I've heard about Jesus. And a being of light came. His light was white. He was all white. It was the purest, pure white that I ever saw. And when he arrived, he changed his shape. He changed from his light, and he changed into the picture of Jesus that I saw on the wall of the parochial school that I went to. And naturally, I thought, well, okay, that light is Jesus. And what he did was he took my soul into his light. And he told me one thing. He told me all humans have to do is love one another and everything will be well. Because I was concerned about the planet and I was concerned about humanity. I think he picked up on that. And after he said that, then he vanished. He was gone. And I I wasn't about to try to ask him questions or anything. I just it was because his light was so strong. I felt him to be a supreme type of a being, and I asked Bob about it. I said, "Well, what is he? Is he the only one?" And Bob told me that he was a master that was sent to the earth to show people how to love one another, and that he was one of many masters that came here for that purpose, and he's probably the best known one that I knew of at the time. I didn't really know about other religions or anything like that, and the way that I understood it is that the icons for the major religions in the world, those are their masters for them. And that ran contrary to what I knew. But
what you had been taught, in other words.
Right. It ran contrary to it, but in the light of everything else, it really made sense to me.
I was just thinking, didn't that make perfect sense?
Yes, it did. I couldn't believe it. And after he left, after this Master Jesus left, I could see all of the planets, and they were all in a line, and I could see the auras of all of them, and I could feel the energies of them, their collective energy. And I couldn't believe that. That just, affected me in such a big way, and the feeling of love that I saw and I felt when I saw the Earth. Aurelius, what's an official name is, that's what Bob told me, and I could feel all of those, and I could feel, and I could hear them too. I could hear the energies coming in and out of them. And I could hear, and it played like a song, is how I could describe it. And I was just in awe. I didn't know what to think of that. I didn't know. There was nowhere else that I could think of that I wanted to go. And I asked Bob, I said, "Well, what should we do now? Where should we go?" And Bob said, "I know a place where we can go." And we flew back towards Gaia, and there was this place that was in the clouds. Not in the clouds, but in the shadow, really, of Gaia. It was close to Gaia, and I could see light beings going back and forth from Gaia to this place. And we went there, and there was nature there, and there was a city there. And all the buildings were white, and they had wood framing around them, and I could see plants growing from the framing, and the wood glowed. It had the same, the wood had an aura too. And we went into this one building, and I saw people that were doing craft type things. There's souls like me, and they were all doing craft type things that were related to the arts. And we went up these stairs, and I remember going up the stairs, and they were wooden stairs. And I walked up the stairs, and we went into three different rooms. And there were spirit beings in all three rooms. There was one in one room, one in another room, and two in another room. And they kind of had an age to them. And the first one I saw was, it seemed like it was female, and it was more mature than, it was very mature, and I'll call her she. She was very interested in why I was there. She asked me, "Why are you here?" And I said, "Well, not sure." And after I saw her, then I saw what I took to be a male spirit, and he also asked me why I was there, and I had to give him the same answer because I still really didn't know. And then I went into the next room, and there were two spirits in there, and they were playing And they looked at me, but they really didn't say anything that I can remember. I know that all four of them gave me advice, and they were all four concerned that I was there. And then Bob and I left there, and we went to this other building, and it was a bigger building than the rest. It was huge, and we walked in. Well, we glided really into the door, and to the right of me, there were these double doors that had these gold knobs, and they were wood, and they glowed. And to the left, there was a bench, a wooden bench. And Bob said, "Sit here on the bench. I'm going to go inside." And he went inside the double doors. And when I was sitting on the bench, I remembered the last time I was on the bench. And past life started coming to me. I started seeing things. And I really didn't know what to make of it. And I was just about ready to try to put that together when Bob came out of the room. And he told me, "Go into the room, be truthful about what's, if they ask you questions, and do not be afraid. Because the spirit beings in there will not hurt you, and they will not judge you. All they're going to do is show you your life." And when I went in there, their energy kind of washed over me, and I could tell that they were like teachers, and each one of them had an aspect of me to show, and they were aspects of my emotions and my actions and how I interacted with other people and with the environment around me. And I started to see, I saw myself before I came to the earth, and I could see my parents, and I could see how my parents got together, and I could see my brother and my sister be born before me. And then I went into my mother's womb, and I remember being in the womb.
Wow.
That I remember, it was almost like the love that I felt all through the whole thing after I met Bob. But I remember going out, and I remember it was a tunnel. And I went out, and I came into the light, and it was cold, and I saw the nurses, and I saw them smiling, and they were happy. And I was a little scared because I knew things were different than they were for me in the womb. And I proceeded on to see my life from all the aspects that the beings in the room had, you know, that were responsible to show me. And it was weird because I could see what I did. I could see it from my point of view. I could see it from the person I was interacting with point of view. And I could feel my feelings from it, and I could feel their feelings from it. And, of course, I did a lot of negative things in my life. And yes, I hurt people. And, yes, the life review hurt. Everything that I did was really amplified. And, of course, that worked with the good things, too, that I did. Because I did do good things. And the good things felt a lot better than the bad things. Well, after everything was done and we came to the present, while I was with me being before them, they asked me if I felt that I was more positive or more negative. And I thought about lying to them. I thought about telling them positive because I really wanted to stay there. But
so were they asking you about your being more positive or negative in the context of your life review, or how you were feeling now, or how you regarded yourself? What was the context of that question?
It was in the context of how I thought about myself based on my interactions with others.
Okay. And so how did you really feel?
Well, I really felt that I was more negative than positive, but I wanted to stay there, and I thought about telling them that but I knew it wasn't the truth, and I knew they knew my thoughts, and I knew they knew I was thinking about lying, and I didn't want to go ahead and go through with the lie because Bob told me do not lie to them.
Mm.
And I didn't feel that it was right. And after that, they asked, so they told me that I could stay there if I wanted to, but all the lessons that I would have planned on learning in my life, all the goals that I set before I came here, I would still have to meet those goals. And the best, most efficient way to do it would be to come back here and live the rest of my life. They said I was on the path that I set.
This is a very good point you're making here, because I have also been in discussion with people about suicide. When people commit suicide, I give it the analogy of dropping out of class. Well, you haven't finished learning your lessons yet, or, you know, having your experiments and in the laboratory, as it were, in the cosmic laboratory. So that when you drop out of class, then what you've got to do is go back and start at the beginning of the class again. So it's just best to stick with it and complete the class. So it looks like here you were given that very same message, that if
yes.
you continued on the other side, you would have to go back at some point and basically start all over again.
Yes, yes, and complete the commitment that I made.
Mm. Good point here. And another good point with all of this, too, is that all the while you were being so loved, and there was no condemnation, no mean-spirited judgments or anything like that. It was just an opportunity for you to face things squarely and then to see, all right, well, here's some areas where I can improve a little bit.
Exactly.
And then also at the same time being sure to acknowledge the positive aspects of your life and how deeply capable you are of knowing and emanating love. So this is wonderful. Continue. This is really, really great to hear this.
Okay, well, the beings told me that I needed to make a decision, and that I should think about it before I decided. So they told me to leave. I went outside the room, and Bob was there, and we went outside the building, and I asked Bob, well, I got to make this decision. What should I do? And he said that, oh, well, you have to think about it. And I asked him, well, what's going to happen if I go back? Can you tell me that? What, like, when would I die? When would I be back here? And he said that he couldn't tell me that. He said that he could tell me that my life was going to continue to be difficult. He said that I would eventually get married, I would have children, my marriage wouldn't be good, and my job situation wouldn't be good, and until I learned how to handle my own energies, those things would not change. And I thought about that, and I had to think, and Bob took me to this garden, and it had a stone bench there. And I sat on that stone bench, and Bob left to leave me to think about this for myself. And I started thinking about all the things that I was shown. I thought about the life that I had. I thought about the things that Bob told me that I would be coming back to, because Bob did say that people were going to know, wanted to know about what happened to me, and that I would eventually be successful in learning how to handle my own energies. And I thought about it, and I thought about it in light of everything that I saw so far. And I thought, well, if I choose to stay, who would that be serving? That would be serving me. That wouldn't be serving everyone else. And I thought about, well, who am I to mess up other people's past that I'm supposed to be interacting with, that we're supposed to be learning from each other through our lives? If I'm not there, then that's going to alter their past too. and I didn't want to be responsible for that. So I chose to return.
Wow.
And when I made that choice, Bob just appeared. And he said, okay, good choice. You can go back. Here's what you do. And he took me to this river that flowed through the city. And he told me that the purpose of the river was to keep souls from knowing too much about the world of spirits so that they can concentrate on living their lives and learn their lessons in a natural way. And he said that for that to happen, you would have to drink the water. But he said, of course, it's up to you whether you want to drink the water. We're going to leave that decision up to you. Only you can decide. And I thought about it, and I thought, well, all these things that I saw, I could use these things, and they're great things. And I thought, well, I don't want to drink the water. Well, when I made that decision, Bob touched me. He touched me in what I would think to be my head area and my lips area, and he said that is for the things that we don't recommend that you remember, the things that would hurt you if you remember. And then he said,
so you're talking about taking the water of the river. Is it sort of like maybe a block or a partition that kept you from accessing or seeing or experiencing certain things that you were not really ready to? Am I understanding this correctly?
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct. And I went into the river, and I went through it, and I went to our planet the same way that I saw the other souls and the other spirit beings, the angels, what have you, that were going back and forth. And I headed for the best energy source that was closest to where I came from. And that was actually the Detroit Zoo, of all places. And I came down to there. I saw that. I remember seeing the water tower that was there. And I knew my way home from there, and I glided into my neighborhood. And I went by my parents' house, and I went in. And I saw their auras and everything. And we really didn't have all that good of a relationship before that. There was a lot of negativity there, and I knew that they were getting positive energies from me that they needed, and I was getting their positive and their negative energies. And I thought, well, okay, they need this energy from me, I will give them energy. And when they were sleeping, I saw their auras and everything, and I sent positive energies to them. And then I left, and I went back to the house to go back to my body. And I stopped at the gate to go into the back door, and I could feel the sun was rising, and I could feel the energy coming from the sun. I could hear it, just like I heard all the other planets, and I was in awe when I saw that. I felt like, okay, I've learned a lot of things. I remember these things. I can use these things to help people. I want to get back into my body so that I can do this. So I went basically through the door. I didn't have to open it. I knew that all I had to do was take myself in there. So I did that. And I saw my body in the chair, and it was not attractive without my soul in it. And I thought, well, I want to get back in there. I'm going to get back in there. So I kind of just melted into it. And as soon as I did, it was like the snap of my fingers, and I woke up. It was just like a clap is how fast it was. And I could remember everything. And I thought, well, I got to tell my friends. There's my friends right there. They're sleeping on the floor. I got to tell them. So I tried to tell them. I woke them all up, and I started to tell them. I started to tell them about where I went. And they said, you didn't go anywhere. You were in the chair the whole night. You're crazy. Stop your crazy talk. And my friends at the time were the people that I trusted the most, because I really didn't have a real close relationship with my family at all. And that right there, when they said that to me, It was like, okay, nobody's going to believe me.
You know what, I want to interrupt you here for just a moment because we're at the top of the hour and we've got a wonderful surprise for our listeners. Toward the Light is going to continue for another hour, and so we're going to have a little break at the moment and let you know that you are listening to Toward the Light, Leading Back to the Source. And this is Reverend Juliet Nightingale. Our special guest for this transmission of Toward the Light is Mr. David Oakford, and we are talking about his tremendous near-death experience that is also revealed in his wonderful book called Journey Through the World of Spirit, God, Gaia, and Archangel, or Guardian Angels, excuse me. So do stick with us. I want to encourage you to visit our website, towardthelight.org and towardthelight.info. Again, we're going to be on the air for another hour for this transmission of Toward the Light, speaking with Mr. David Oakford. Go ahead and continue now, David, with your tremendous testimony. What I do want to ask is, when you were addressing your friends, were you back in your body? Because obviously they responded to you. So when, tell us about that sort of transition back into your body.
Well, I got back in my body, and I knew I was back in my body. And one of the things that I did first was I thought, okay, I'm back in my body. Am I safe? Does everything work? I thought, well, I'm thinking, so my mind works. And I tested all my limbs and everything, all my movements and everything. And I said, okay, I made it, I'm back. And that's when I got up and decided I wanted to tell my friends. And also, when I got back and when I woke up, most of the feelings that I had, most of the feelings of love that I had, and the feelings of confidence that I had, a lot of that just dissolved.
Really?
I couldn't move like I could before.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh, okay, well, I'm back here again. And I couldn't see the things that I was seeing before, the things that are in the empty spaces,
right?
In what we call the empty spaces,
mm-hmm.
which is where the world of spirit is, from what I understand.
So it was a rather abrupt kind of change over then.
Yes.
Back
yes.
into the physical plane. And so you weren't really feeling that deep love and the peace. Were you suddenly beset with anxiety or kind of much the way you were prior to your going out of body?
Well, I felt like the energy that I was before I got back in my body, I felt like it was bottled up.
Uh-huh.
That's how it felt to me. I could still feel it, and I could still remember it, and I knew it was there, but that part of me, I felt that I couldn't get it to work.
Wow.
I didn't know how to get it to work.
Mm-hmm.
And it was basically not knowing how to handle my energies, which was one of my lessons that I needed to learn in my
yeah.
life. So it basically put me back to normal, put me back on track to where I needed to be at the time.
Very interesting. Okay, and so then you awake back into the physical body and you approach your friends, and then what happens from there?
Well, my friends basically told me I was crazy. They were mad because I woke them up. They were mad because I did what I did, and they were scared because they said I was in the chair all night. Now, whether they checked on me or not, I don't know. Whether I was dead the whole night, I don't know. Maybe some of it was, a lot of it was out of body. Maybe I really didn't know for sure how long I was dead because of the time thing. And they were basically angry at me because I did that. And if I would have not have come back here, they would have gotten in trouble.
Now let me ask
because
you this.
We were all underage.
You obviously found them when you came back into body, but whilst you were out of body, you didn't see your friends anywhere. So would it be that maybe they had indeed left the house and then returned, or how do you deduce that?
Well, I didn't see my friends when I walked into the house. I saw my friends after I quote woke up.
Okay, so were they in the house or were they somewhere else?
Well, when I came back and got back in my body, they were in the house and I could see them.
Mm-hmm.
But when in the beginning, but while I was out of my body, for some reason I couldn't see them. I don't know why.
Yeah, that's
a mystery to me.
That's what's interesting to me. I'm wondering if indeed they had not actually been around, you know, during the time that you were looking for them whilst out of body, and then when you returned back, you saw them again. Did you see them in the places that you had expected to see them?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. They were, you know, passed out on the floor, just like normal party type stuff.
Interesting. Okay. So then they were all aggravated and upset with you and thought you were a nutter at this point. And then what happened from there?
Well, I took all that in.
Mm.
I took it all in, and it certainly affected me. I've learned through just exploring that I'm most likely an empath.
Oh yes, I know that one well.
And I can transmit, and I can receive, and I receive whatever's around. And how I handle that makes a big difference. I know this now, and what I didn't know that I was an empath then. I didn't know that I took in all their all the negativity and the anger that they had.
Yeah.
And that brought me down. That brought my vibration down. It brought down to where I was not sure of myself. I thought, well, maybe it was just a drug trip. I wasn't sure about it anymore. I still remembered, but I didn't think that it was. And I couldn't believe that it happened to me. And my friends were the ones that I trusted, and they didn't think it happened. Me, so I didn't believe them. I didn't. I thought things would be different. I thought that my friends would be interested in hearing what I had to say. I thought that I had all these insights to share with them, and they didn't want them, and that kind of made me regret coming back, to be honest with you.
And so then their negative attitudes or responses actually have the capacity to cause you to doubt yourself, to second guess yourself.
Yeah.
Wow. That's painful.
That happens today to a point. Not as much as it did. You know, I can handle it better now.
Mm-hmm. Sure. And so then what happened after that?
Well, I, because of what my friends did and everything, you know, and what they said, I decided I was just going to forget the whole thing. I was going to try to forget the whole thing. And one of the things that Bob told me before I came back was that the drugs and the risky behavior that I had would affect my vibration and keep me from achieving the goals that I need to achieve.
Sure.
And I thought about it, and it's like, well, okay, you know, I'm going to ditch the whole thing. I'm not going to change. Took my cigarettes, took my marijuana, left the house, went home. And then I thought about it, and I all day I said, it's a drug trip, it's a drug trip. It wasn't true. None of it's right. You never heard of none of this stuff before. You really screwed up. You're lucky that you're here. And I basically tried to talk myself out of it, and that continued for quite a while, for quite a few years for me.
Mm-hmm.
And that night, the next night, I went to bed, and Bob came back to me, and I got myself to a point to where I didn't even want to see him. I didn't want to take any of his advice or anything. I basically acted pretty immaturely about the whole thing, is what I did. And I told Bob that I didn't want to talk to him. I didn't want to hear about him. I don't want to remember any of this. And that was my tack for a long time afterwards.
How did he come to you? How did he appear to you?
Well, he appeared to me to tell me things. He wanted me to develop some sort of psychic ability that I had.
Mm-hmm.
He told me that a friend of mine was going to die in a car accident, and he would be drunk doing it, and I would be some sort of a factor in that. And I didn't want to know that. I didn't want to know that at all. But I did try to tell my friend after. I told him, I talked to him, don't drink and drive, don't drink and drive. But he drank and drove, man. He got in a car accident, and he was drunk when he did it. And I could not, I think my involvement in that was that I knew, but I could not stop him. I was not successful at it because I thought, well, I don't want him to die. He's young. He probably has goals that he needs to make. And I have to try to stop him. And after that happened, I said, no, I'm putting all this away. I'm not going to talk to anyone about it. I'm not going to tell anyone about it. I'm not going to think about it. I'm going to work to forget everything.
That's difficult.
That's what I did for a long time.
Now, what year was this? I should ask you that. What year was your near-death experience?
1979.
Okay.
It was in the middle of June.
Okay. Yeah.
I was almost 20. My birthday is August 3rd.
Oh, okay. Very interesting because, of course, I've had a few near-death experiences, but I had a huge one in the mid-70s, and I know, like you, there's so many experiencers who, when they had their NDEs in the 50s, 60s, or 70s, or what have you, they just wouldn't talk about it. And so many of us were in the closet, as it were, and didn't have our coming out until many years afterwards, for a myriad of reasons, not the least of which are the ones that you are currently describing. So this is very interesting. What's also interesting is that nobody contacted a doctor or got help. They just sort of left you in the chair, left you for dead, basically, eh? Is that what happened?
That's what happened. There was no doctors, no hospital involved. I felt okay after, and everything worked and everything, so I thought, well, I'm okay. Why should I even go?
After the fact,
I didn't want to tell my parents or anything because of how it happened.
Oh, so they never knew.
I didn't
want
to get in trouble. I didn't want anyone else to get in trouble.
Wow. Okay. Interesting. So you just were, God love you, bottled up with all of this for quite a while.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't start sharing until about 1997.
Yeah, that's when I found out about the International Association for Near-Death Studies. That was interesting, the same year that...
I did tell my wife about it,
uh-huh.
But I never really told her the whole thing because I kind of got the same thing I got from my friends, you know, the cold shoulder about it.
When did you tell her? And maybe we should back up and see, when did you get married and when did you actually confide in her about this?
Well, we got married in 1982, and I talked to her about it in 1984.
And she...
When I was having some huge problems at the time. We were having some huge problems at the time, and I remembered it, and I didn't want to remember it, and she was my partner, and I thought obligated to tell her about it because of the effect that it had on me and the effect it was having on me then. Because even though I tried to forget it, I couldn't forget it. And quite frankly, I walked around thinking I was crazy for a long time.
Yeah, a lot of people do, and that's why getting this information out there is so important, to let people know that they're not crazy in the least, and these experiences are very real and they are very meaningful. And I wonder if, you know, when you were dealing with some kind of personal crisis within your marriage or family, I take it. Is that correct? And then
yes,
that
correct.
Sort of compelled you to confide in her that this experience happened. And it, the memory of it was probably just as clear as it was at the time that it happened. Am I correct about this?
That's correct.
Okay. So what did she say or do? Did she just slough it off as a hallucination or what have you?
She told me that it was a near-death experience, but I didn't believe her. I didn't believe her. It comes back to the same thing. I couldn't believe that it happened to me. I didn't believe that I deserved that sort of a thing.
So she did acknowledge it as an NDE then?
Yes, she did.
And you were the one who were now countering that?
Yes. Because there's a thing, a pattern, and it even continues to today. If my wife tells me something, I will not believe it. I will, if she tells me, it gives me advice, you should do this, I will not believe it from her. But if somebody else tells me, then I'll believe it. It's a pattern. It's something I really need to work out. I really do.
People do this. Spouses do it. Kids do it. I know that happens with my daughter. I would, and she's probably listening right now, that I would tell her something, and she would just kind of ignore it, but then if somebody else said it, then it bore weight for her. So I think that is often rather typical with people who are close to you. And so I guess maybe your wife needs to do a little bit of reverse psychology on you.
Well, she's very good at that. She's been, over the years, she's learned.
Bless her.
She knows me. She knows how I work.
Very interesting. So what happened after that? Because, you know, all of these details are really important, especially for a lot of people who can be listening and thinking about their own experiences that they've had and all of the delicate little details that lead to their ultimate, you know, embracing of the experience and then taking it further. What happened when your wife was telling you that it was an NDE? Was this the first time you had ever heard of the term near-death experience?
Yes.
Okay. And then what evolved from there?
Well, we had problems for a couple of years, and we had to basically stand off from each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I do have to say, though, that my risky behavior that I was doing before I had the experience,
sure,
that ceased after the experience. I just want to note that for the listeners. I joined the Navy, and I left, and she was at home. She was going to college, and we stayed married, but we were pretty much separated for about 2 years. And after she finished college, then she moved to where I was. We stayed married. We just weren't together.
So did you join the military to basically as a means of escape?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. But it wasn't all an escape type thing. I felt like I was wasting away. I was unemployed, and when I was employed, I worked in factories doing the put it on the machine, take it off the machine, you know,
sure,
running presses, that kind of thing. And I really wasn't stretching my mind,
mm-hmm,
like I wanted to. And I thought I would get that from the Navy, and I did. And I needed the discipline. So the decision to go into the Navy was the right thing for me to do. It basically worked out.
Mm-hmm.
And we ended up getting back together, And so because of how much I matured during that time, we ended up having a decent relationship. It still wasn't perfect. It still was, you know, I still didn't really know how to handle my energy and everything, but we were together and we did love each other. So that was, you know, that was one of the things that we got from being separated like that.
And that will often work that way, that healing really does take place when people can just sort of step back and take a breather, as it were, and get a different perspective and integrate and then re-enter. So that makes a lot of sense. And all of these apparent detours in our lives also serve to actually lead us to where we need to be for our growth. It's like a labyrinth, really. So this is very good. And I want to ask you, too, were you perhaps being haunted by your NDE, or would it come to mind or cause you to think about it or ponder it, or were you still trying to shove it out of your consciousness?
Well, haunted is a pretty good word, because that would describe it. Mm-hmm. I would, no matter how much I wanted to forget it, I never really forgot it. I kept it bottled up. I kept it bottled up to the point where by the mid-90s, I needed to get it out of me. In the early 90s, I read Betty J. Eady's book.
Okay.
And I saw common things between my experience and her experience. And that was when I started to believe that it was a near-death experience, again, from an outside source other than my wife.
Right, yeah.
You know, I thought about it, and I started to value it, but what I did was I took the insights that I learned from about interacting with each other and the sharing and the exchange of energies between each other. I used that to change my life a little bit, to change my tune a little bit. I knew that I needed to be more positive, and I knew I needed to work toward that, and I started to do that. And it helped me to be a little better, helped me to feel better about it, helped me to act better, helped me to be more positive, helped my interactions with my family and everything, because by then I had two children, and I eventually had two more within the next 3 years.
Wow.
And I was also in college then. I went to college for accounting. That's what I did after the Navy.
Well, these are very, very positive universal messages that you've been sharing here. The one about being loving no matter what, and what we need is indeed love, just like the Beatles song, all we need is love. And then also to be more positive, and you know, we can all use these messages, and I think we cannot really emphasize this enough. It's very simple, but very, very profound at the same time. And it raises our frequency so that we can be that love that we come to know through the near-death experience. So go on and tell us about what started evolving as a result. And now you've gotten some external input outside of your family unit, validating your NDE. What from there?
Well, I started to be more positive, and I thought about it, and I started to value what happened. I started to think about it more. I started to actively process it.
Good.
And I basically used it to make my life better, and it reminded me of my energies. So I started working on those, and I found that as I worked on those, my life would get better. Things would get better. Things wouldn't be so chaotic and so negative. And I found that it worked. And every time that I did that, I moved up and I learned. I started to learn, and I'm still learning how to handle my own energy and how to live up to the goal that Master Jesus presented to me, which like you said, is a simple thing, but it's still a hard thing to do. You know, it was hard for me anyway.
Well, just today when I was thinking about it, how so easy it is to toggle between these low frequencies of fear, and then we can suddenly move into these elation, you know, feelings of elation and being so enveloped in this unconditional love. And whilst we're in that space of love, it feels like nothing can touch us, no negativity can enter in, and then all of a sudden, you know, there's the toggling or moving back and forth, and it is a constant discipline and exercise to keep focusing on being in that higher frequency, because they are completely different frequencies. And when you're in a lower frequency of fear, it's very hard to, well, number one, it's impossible to see clearly when we're in a space of fear, because it is such a low, dense vibrational frequency and not really a real one. So it's important to focus on raising the frequency into that of love, because that is what enables us to see clearly and know truth also. So this is a very powerful testimony that you are sharing here. And what, when did you sort of start to have your coming out, as it were, as I refer to it, with your near-death experience?
Okay, what I did was I shared the insights. I talked to my wife about it. I told her about the whole thing after I read Betty Edie's book. And I didn't know really. I couldn't just, I didn't feel that I could just walk up to someone
yeah.
that I didn't know and start telling them. I even tried it, and I got like real quizzical looks like, oh, gee, look at this guy, you know. I ended up, we moved to where we're living now on the west side of the suburbs in Detroit, and we finally got internet. And that was, and we didn't get internet until like 1997.
Same here. This is really interesting. That's when I first went online, was 1997.
And I found chat rooms. I found the on AOL, they had metaphysics chat rooms, still do. I went in there, and I liked it because nobody had to know who I am.
Yep.
No one had to know. I could be anonymous. And they were talking about things that were like that. And when I would hear something that was familiar to me, it would like ping, yup. And I thought, well, I know stuff. I can share stuff in here. Let's try it. So I started to share the insights of what happened to me. And people were really receptive about it. And they said, well, how do you know this? How do you know this? How did you find out about it? So that's when I started talking about my near-death experience. And the more I talked about it, people asked me more and more questions. And then a man from the UK actually contacted me and wanted me to write a 2,000-word essay, what happened. So I wrote that essay, and I sent it to him. He edited a little bit, and then he sent it back to me. And I thought, well, all my friends in the chat room were interested in this. I think I should share that with them. So it was right around Christmas time in 1998, and I sent that essay to them. And the next thing I knew, about 3 weeks later, I got an email from one of my friends saying, check out this website, Near Death Experiences in the Afterlife, Kevin Williams' website.
Yes, Kevin. We love you, Kevin.
Yes, we do. And I saw my experience on there, the essay that I wrote. And it's like, whoa, okay, I didn't know that was there. So I wrote Kevin, and I thanked him for it. And he actually had my name wrong. He had my daughter's last name as my last name, or my daughter's first name is my last name for some reason. So I wrote him and told him what my name was, and I told him, you know, thanks for putting it on there. And I gave him my email address so that he could put that on there too. And I got emails. Even today, 100 people a day read that essay. And it's an original essay. It's still on there.
Great.
And I got emails I got a big stack of emails from people asking me questions, people sharing their experiences with me, people wanting to know more, people suggesting that I should write a book. And you know, I thought about it. It's like, well, there's a demand here. People want to know. Bob told me this would happen. And I decided to, I answered all the ones that I could answer. And I took that essay and I expanded on it. I made it better. I explained a little more. And I wrote it and I tried to get it published. And actually, that's not this book. It was my first book. And I got my first book published. And from that, after a couple of years, I sent that to Dr. Harper, because I was going to review his book, Transformers, Shamans of the 21st Century.
Yes, and he was on Toward the Light last week, and we were talking about that book. He's great. Now, what is the title of your first book?
My first book is Soul Bared, A Metaphysical Journey.
Okay.
It was my first try for a book, and like all first tries, they could have been better. And I sent that book to John, and I was going to review his book, and he was going to review my book, and we were going to put them on Amazon. Well, John emailed me back and said, proposal, let's write another book. I'm the editor-in-chief at Reality Press. And I thought, well, yeah, I'll do this, because he's a researcher too.
Yes.
And I've learned more about this, and my first book was only 61 pages, and I could have done better on it, and this was my second chance. Journey Through the World of Spirit was my second chance.
How did you find John?
How did I find him?
Yes.
I'm an Amazon watcher.
Oh, okay.
I'm an Amazon watcher. I'm very interested in the near-death experience genre. I've been watching, especially since my first book was published. I have an addiction that way. I thought, well, I'll write a letter to John and ask him if he'd be interested in this, and he was.
It's not hard to understand that. That's great. Yeah, he's in Washington. This is really, really tremendous. Now, at the time, did you know about IANS or no?
I learned about IANS in 1997, or was it 98? It was one of those years. I learned about it from Kevin's website.
Okay.
That's how I caught on to it.
Okay.
And I met up with PMH right around that time. Mm-hmm. And while I was in the midst of writing my first book, I sent that to her and to see what she would see what she thought about it. And she sent me a letter back. You know, we talked a little, and she sent, and that's when she endorsed my story for me. And that was when it really hit home to me that yes, it was a near-death experience. Experts say, the biggest expert that I know of said so. it was, again, more validation for me.
Yes, yes. And she's been on Toward the Light a number of times, and including most recently on 16 December of 2007. She's wonderful. And it's really nice to have a fellow experiencer combined with researcher. So
yes, yes. And actually, I've met PMH at IANS in 2004, a conference in 2004.
I was there.
In 2006, I met her in Virginia Beach.
Yeah.
And I actually had the pleasure of presenting with her at what they call a congress in Portugal about death. I was invited, someone at that organization read my experience on Kevin's website. They invited me to come and speak at their congress about death. And, of course, I accepted. And later on, they emailed me and said, do you know any researchers who would be interested in coming here? And I said, well, I'm not sure if she's interested in coming here, but I certainly know a researcher. So I gave PMH's name, and they invited her to go. So I had the pleasure of presenting with her at that Congress in March of last year.
Oh, wonderful.
So I do know PMH. And actually, she told me that I could take some of her whatever I wanted to take, whatever I felt I needed to take from her Complete Idiot's Guide that she wrote. And actually, there's an appendix in my book that is taken from there. I basically cherry-picked things that would help people to learn what the near-death experience is, what the different kinds are, and things like that.
That's...
And what the researchers say about it, just information that I thought people would be interested in.
Well, I actually think there can't be too much information because, you know, comparing notes like this, all of the myriad of experiences and things that people find during their near-death states are very, very powerful. And there's so many different dimensions and different frequencies that one does experience during near-death states, and there isn't one that's more profound or special than the other. They're all very, very special, and I think it's tremendous that, you know, somehow there was this wonderful divine intervention, as it were, that propelled you forward to finally be able to come out with this, to feel confident about your experience and to be able to share it with others. A question that I've got for you is, have you had any further encounters, you know, either through lucid dreams or otherwise, with Bob, or did they pretty much end shortly after your near-death experience?
They ended. I believe that Bob respected what I said, that I didn't want to be involved. So I think I think what he did was he melted back to, and I believe he's still with me, he melted back to the role that he played in my life before I had the experience.
Right.
Because he was with me all the time, and he knew everything, and I'm very sure he's with me now, and I'm very sure he's doing the same thing, recording things, ready to help me if I should ask him. And it's one a goal that I do have is to reconnect with him if I can. But I'm not sure, I've been trying, but I'm not sure exactly how to do that. It's something that I would like to do in the future.
Well, that's a good thing. When also just put your intent out there and maybe address him to say I'm ready to see you now, to have another encounter, because obviously you've grown tremendously and you're a lot stronger now. And it's very interesting too to think about the fact that you are such an empath, as am I, and a lot of NDEers do become very pronounced empaths. At the same time, not being daunted, you know, when somebody does look at us cross-eyed or sideways, as it were, or not having the response that we would like or hope, to somehow still feel so strong and solid within the knowledge and wisdom of not only having had the experience, but the truth that we've gleaned as a result of going through that experience. So now obviously you've got a lot more support. It must be very empowering and uplifting for you at this point. What are you doing with all of this now? Are you doing speaking engagements? Are you working on another writing project? Where has this taken you to this point?
Well, at the moment, I have the book. I did have the one speaking engagement back in March. I'm open for speaking engagements if anyone would like to have one. I will be sharing at IANS group in Virginia Beach this year. I do plan to do that. I've been invited to do that, and I will be doing that. I actually went to a body, mind, and spirit type of a place. There's a campus that's about a mile away from my house. I just found out about 2 years. They've been there for a long time. I went to a potluck dinner there, and I shared my experience with them, and they have some books, and I'm going to be going back there. But so far as things being scheduled, the most what I've been doing lately are shows like yours.
Oh, great.
I've been on a few, and I'm sure I'm going to be on some more. I have some more scheduled, and we'll have some repeat ones. I know I have some of those coming, and I'm basically open. Open. I mean, I'm not going to. My publisher does a lot of that type of a thing for me, to help arrange things for me to get people to be interested. So
yes.
We're going to see what happens.
This is great. Now, when are you going to be at the Virginia Beach Irons? I actually spoke there too, back in 2003 in December. It's very interesting.
I'm not sure yet.
Oh, okay. It hasn't been. The date hasn't been determined yet. They're
right,
wonderful
right.
There. Yeah, Cheryl Birch and Reverend Dick Dingus. Lots of love to you, boy. They've certainly done some tremendous work. In fact, Reverend Dingus actually joined IANS when I spoke at the Virginia Beach group. So that was really a tremendous experience. They're a very lovely group. And also, why don't you share with our listeners what your website is? I take it you do have a website.
Yes, I do have a website. The book's website is journeythroughtheworldofspirit.com. It has things about my book there. It has a little bit about me. It has a page where you can go and you can buy the book at different places, because I know people buy books from different places. And I'm actually going to add on there that you can buy books directly through me through the website also, but I haven't quite done that yet.
But my
website is journeythroughtheworldofspirit.com.
journeythroughtheworldofspirit.com. That's great, and I'll also have that on your profile page on towardthelight.org too, so and then when the show's archived, it will be on there and people can listen to it again. This is really wonderful. Now, I'm wondering, something just came to me, an idea about you speaking to youths and maybe even writing some articles about this, because I'm feeling something about needing to reach young people with this message, because especially the way that your NDE happened.
Have you thought
about that?
Yes, I've been thinking about that, and actually the universe has kind of been taking care of that for me.
Uh-huh.
I do know, I have gotten emails from people who are in recovery, who the place where they're that's helping them recover is using my experience that's on Kevin's website. And I've gotten emails from people saying that, yes, I heard about you. I heard about you. I heard about your experience in my recovery group. But I am certainly open to more of that. I'm certainly open. That's one avenue that I certainly could and feel that I probably should pursue.
I think it would be really, really vital at this point, because I am all too aware. And you know, PMH points out, too, and she's written about the new children. And, you know, the children, the kids these days are just remarkable beings. And, you know, so many of them are really literally wired differently than they have been in the past. So they're a lot more sensitive. They're a lot more intelligent. They're a lot more creative. They're a lot more actually, in fact, like near-death experiences. We are so radically altered as a result of these experiences. And so these kids are very sensitive. They're very intolerant of anything that is phony or inauthentic. So, you know, that unfortunately, I think a lot of them might still be prone to want to escape into drugs or what have you. They need to know that there is another outlet, that there is another path that they can take that isn't going to be destructive. And how your NDE actually enabled you to basically go cold turkey, as it were. You just stalked. You even stopped smoking cigarettes. Am I correct about that?
No, ma'am, that is not correct.
Okay, you didn't stop smoking cigarettes.
That's a goal that I have.
Okay.
I wish I could say differently, but I got to be honest here.
Okay, because I heard you say something about putting down your cigarettes and all of this stuff, or picking up picking it up and putting it down. But anyway, I think that I'm getting intuitively that you could really be reaching a lot of young people. And in fact, if anybody would like to call in and ask questions, you're certainly more than welcome to. All of the phone numbers are on the screen of the BBS website. If you're in Canada, you ring a different number than if you're in America. But this, I think that it's really important to address the young people, like going to, you know, maybe approaching different campuses, different groups, youth groups and what have you, because I feel that you can really, really reach them in a very special way. And you know, that would be very good for them. And also, I think that as you, the more that you share, that will also help really deepen your own experience and your memory of it and help you to integrate it, because you've really had a very, very special experience. Now, one question I want to ask you is that whilst you were out of body, going back to your experience, were you feeling or experiencing a human-like body, or did you have a different form? How do you remember that?
It was mixed.
It was mixed?
Yes. Some of it was, I think, mostly the human type of form was to give me a frame of reference.
Uh-huh.
But the light, the energy, the energy like you would see, similar to an aura picture that you could get.
Yes, right.
It's very, very similar to that. It was mostly that. It was mostly that. But the human form was, I believe, a frame of reference.
I believe we've got a caller. You are on the air. Who are we speaking to?
Hi, it's Adrienne in Chicago again.
Well, how are you?
I'm doing fine. Happy belated birthday.
Well, thank you so much. It was great. It was quiet. I didn't even go online yesterday. I said, I'm going to take a break.
I think I did.
You
deserve it. My question is about what you were speaking about, handling your energies. And I love that. And I'm wondering if you have any recommendations on how one goes about learning to handle the energies. You know, like, I think we all know that what's not working.
Mm-hmm.
But do you speak to your, do you ask Bob? I mean, what do you do to learn how to handle your energies?
Well, I learn about the energies. I make an effort to learn about them. I make an effort to learn about how they work. And I do a lot of work on the internet for research-wise. On how to do it, and asking people too, asking people that that are into that sort of thing, and I basically gather up the knowledge that I can find, and I consider it, and I pick what I feel in my heart is good for me.
Okay.
To use, that's what I do.
Okay.
And I'm still learning. Still learning.
Pardon me?
I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't hear what you said.
And I'm still learning it. I'm still mm-hmm. learning how to go about and what to, gathering the information that I need to learn about it.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you for the call. This is wonderful. Yeah, something that comes to mind about that to me is that when I am in a place of love, I feel my whole body feeling very open and very much at peace. But when I am in a maybe more negative space or not properly aligned, as it were, I feel a bit of a contraction happening. It's sort of like I'm shooting down and being like that little bug that curls up into a tiny ball. You know, there's this big contraction that takes place, and I feel it in the solar plexus. And also feel it in the heart chakra area. So this is kind of interesting. I'm wondering if you have experiences like that too, where you actually have different sensations that sort of propel you or guide you or give you an indication of whether you're moving in the right direction or not.
Yes, I do. I do. It's more along the lines of feeling. feeling difficult. That's one of the things that I have learned. That's and that's how I can best describe it. It's the feelings, I feel it.
Yes, and the deep feelings within you, and you have physical sensations with that as well.
Yeah.
I understand that, and but when you're in the negative feeling and you know it's wrong, what do you do to correct that? That's, I guess, what I'm trying to get at.
Oh, okay. Well, when I feel negative, what I do is I try to shake it off. I visualize that once I recognize that I'm in a negative mode, I visualize myself as washing it off, flicking it away. I use stones. I use a black stone for grounding, because I know that usually if I'm in a negative way, I've learned so far that that it has something to do with how I'm grounded, or at least that's what I've found so far.
Wow.
Is I basically try to ground myself, and I surround myself with positive people that have positive energies, so that because I know that I'm an empath of sorts, and I do collect energies, and a lot of times if I'm negative, it's a lot of it comes from me, but some of it it comes from energies that I've collected and I need to let go of.
Okay, that's what you mean about the handling of energies.
Yes, yes.
Okay, I was getting confused with all that. Okay, thank you so much. I'm going to hang up and listen in.
Thank you for the call.
Thank you,
Juliet. Okay.
All right, love. That's really great, because I think that as we, you know, we glean so much wisdom from our near-death experiences, and a very important step for all of us is being to be able to honor and acknowledge our experiences and then take what we have learned from them and having the courage to bring them forth, come what may, and not allow other people's reactions to daunt us, especially if they're negative reactions. So this is really tremendous. We've got just a few more minutes. Do you have any news, anything that you would like to share, any input either from your near-death experience or advice that you would like to share with our listeners before we close for this transmission?
Well, for listeners who have not had a near-death experience, I would just like to go on record as saying that might want to consider that, yes, they are real, and yes, they can be useful to you personally, that the insights can be. And for the people who have had experiences, I would like to say that if it feels right to you to share it, it will probably help you to share it. I know that it has helped me, and if you feel crazy about it, I can give you confirmation that yes, these things are real, and they are useful, and they are something that should be shared. And for people who are into drugs, maybe there are some people listening, maybe someone who knows, who's listening knows someone who's into them, that they alter the energy structure, they alter the energy that you have, and they're really not a good idea. And if I can be of any help to anyone along those lines, feel free to contact me. I'm easy enough to find.
Do you want to share with our listeners how they might contact you, David?
Okay. My email address is D. Oakford, D and my last name, is D-O-A-K-F-O-R-D, at twmi.rr.com. That is my direct email address. Of course, I can also be contacted through my website, journeytotheworldofspirit.com. I can be contacted, how else can I be contacted? Through the first shot at me telling my experience at the Near-Death Experiences and Afterlife website. There's a link to my email address there. Email actually would be the best way.
Okay. Yes, and that website is near-death.com. N-E-A-R-D-E-A-T-H.com. Kevin Williams has done tremendous work on that. And pretty soon you will also be able to see David's profile and the information and even hear the archived edition of this show at towardthelight.org/davidolford.html. Again, the title of this tremendous book that details this amazing near-death experience is entitled Journey Through the World of Spirit, God, Gaia, and Guardian Angels by David L. Olford. This has been really tremendous, and I want to thank you so much for being with us for this transmission of Toward the Light, David. It's been absolutely wonderful. You have been listening to Toward the Light, leading back to the source. This is Reverend Juliet Nightingale reminding you that it is only with the heart that one can see rightly. What is essential is invisible to the eye. Again, please do visit our website, towardthelight.org and towardthelight.info, which is our media page. If this show has been meaningful and uplifting for you, please consider making a donation to help support Toward the Light and the wonderful services and support that you can gain through our organization. This is Reverend Juliet Nightingale reminding you that only love prevails. We will talk to you next week when we have Mr. Jock Brockes on our show, and this is going to be a really tremendous show. He is a medium and a healer and an experiencer as well. So blessings and light to all of you. Thank you for joining us on Toward the Light. We'll speak with you next week.